Welcome to the A to Z of Sex with me, Dr. Lori Beth Bisbee. I'm a sex and intimacy coach and a psychologist, and I have spent the last 30 plus years helping people to create and maintain meaningful relationships that have sizzling sex without shame. We are working our way through the erotic alphabet one letter at a time. Today the letter is P, and P is for patriarchal abuse. And today we're going to talk about female genital mutilation. So joining me to talk about this difficult subject is Farzana Doctor. Farzana Doctor is a Toronto-based author of four novels, Stealing Nazreen, 6 Meters of Payment, All Inclusive, and Seven. Seven was just named an Indigo Chapter's Best Book of the Year and Amnesty International Reader's 2020 Choice. Farzana is also the Maasai behind Dear Maasai, a new sex and relationship column for FGM/C survivors. She's also an activist, part-time psychotherapist, and an amateur tarot card reader. And I will put her website, which is farzanadoctor.com, in the notes below the podcast. So welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
Gosh, it's my pleasure. So I want to start off because I don't know how many of listeners will even have any idea about female genital mutilation and cutting. So I want to give them the WHO definition, and then I'm going to ask you for your comments on that. So what they say is female genital mutilation involves the partial or total removal of external female genitalia or other injury to the female genital organs for non-medical reasons. The practice has no health benefits for girls and women. It can cause severe bleeding and problems urinating and later cysts, infections, as well as complications in childbirth and increased risks of newborn deaths. It says more than 200 million girls and women alive today have been cut in 30 countries in Africa, the Middle East, and Asia, where FGM is concentrated. It's mostly carried out on young girls between infancy and age 15. And they say female genital mutilation is a violation of the human rights of girls and women, and they're opposed to all forms and opposed to healthcare providers who will perform female genital mutilation. And the treatment of health complications in 27 high prevalence countries costs $1.4 billion US dollars per year.
So I would add that we now understand that it's happening in 92 countries across the world. So this is really a global issue. I think there used to be this idea that it was places in Africa and the Middle East and Asia, but you know, we're hearing survivors, you know, but this is a Me Too movement for this issue. And so survivors are beginning to come forward in different ways than we've seen before. So recently we've heard of survivors in Russia, in Colombia, and South America. And we have seen white American women as well coming forward. So we really need to start thinking about this issue in the full complexity. And I think of it as part of the culture of patriarchy. And if you think of all the kind of patriarchal sexual violence that happens all across the world, it's just part of the same continuum. Right. Like it's the same as rape culture in some ways. It's the same as, you know, the whole mythology around virgin whore stuff, right? This is done to control girls and women's and non-binary people's sexuality.
For me, it was really interesting because it's something that I knew about in terms of Africa and Asia. And it's something that I'd seen in some clients who had come forward in the United Kingdom, who'd come forward for treatment for trauma. And so it's certainly a very live issue in the UK, and there's a live issue about children being taken back to family of origins countries. But what surprised me, and I can't remember which show it was on now, but I was in conversation with somebody who mentioned the white young women in the US from some intense Christian sects where this is going on now as well. And I had not ever heard that.
Yes. And you know, a colleague told me recently that until the 70s, some health insurance plans covered it. So doctors were performing it. So that means that there are like people out there in their 40s and 50s and older who may have had this and maybe don't really understand what has been done to their bodies because no one talks about it. It's such a taboo subject.
Health insurance. I mean, now I come from a Jewish background. And so circumcision is part of the culture. That's something that happens at 7 days. But I was also raised in America where everybody was circumcised. I mean, I know that that's changed recently. But certainly up to a certain age, like if you were born in the 60s, the 70s, and the 80s, the chances are, and you were male, the chances are you were circumcised. And as a result, and that there are circumcisions that happen, male circumcisions that happen for medical reasons.
It's this powerful, like, social norm, you know, it just seems like a normal thing to do. And so people do it and they don't think is it harmful? Could it cause problems? And that's how it is definitely in the community that I'm from. I'm from the Dawoodi Bora community, which is based in India. And we've only been having a public discourse about this issue for the last 5 years. Wow. And so it's this like really powerful social norm in the community where people just thought it was normal. And so activists in the last 5 years have really been trying to educate around, you know, there could be some really big consequences, mostly psychosexual kinds of consequences.
But do you think the reason that we don't talk about it is because talking about psychosexual things around women is something that doesn't get talked about anyway? I'm amazed at how many women that I see in their 60s who have never looked at themselves and don't know a thing about their own anatomy. And that's not unusual. But quite shocking when you think about it.
Yes, I think it's certainly because of that. And then it's also about trauma. Like most survivors will talk about having a sense that what was happening was to be kept secret in much the same way that, you know, child sexual abuse survivors have that feeling. And so there is this powerful pressure, internal pressure, to never talk about it. So I think it's both things that are happening at the same time.
So I know there's a really wide variety. WHO describes four different kinds, but I know there's an even wider variety. Yes. And are there cultural reasons that are given for each type?
No, the cultural reasons would be the same. And again, that's why I call it the culture of patriarchy, because it's all about controlling sexuality. But there might be nuances in different communities. So, but you do hear the same thing, like it makes a girl good, it makes her more marriageable, that kind of thing. It's all ridiculous. But again, it's kind of like male circumcision. If we thought, oh, it makes them cleaner. Again, social norm. It's not, you know, accurate. Yeah.
I know. It has such a huge impact, though. Unlike for men, where pleasure is still felt, where some men argue they have more pleasure. I mean, there's a huge debate that I've been privileged to sit on the sidelines of. But unlike for men, for women, this really does control their sexual experience in really horrific ways.
Yes. And in my community, there are two groups that did a couple of studies to look at what the impacts are. And around 30% of women said that it had severely affected their sex lives. Another 35% said they weren't sure if it did or not, which I think speaks to lack of sex ed. And some of the impacts were like too much sensitivity or not enough sensitivity, trouble with orgasms. And then there were definitely people who talked about like trouble with trust, which impacts sex, right?
Right. Definitely. And I imagine if they were to have looked at things like dissociation during sex, that they would find that research would find that was something that's quite common. I mean, you form your first, it's so early in life, you're forming some of your first memories of someone else touching you.
Yes.
In a process that isn't pleasant, that isn't something that you understand, that in many cases is done without anesthetic, isn't it?
That's right. Yeah, no anesthetic. It's often done by amateur cutters. Sometimes it's done by doctors as well. And it's also often done under duress, right? Because kids are told that they're going to a party or for ice cream, and then this like painful, confusing thing is being done to them by a trusted elder. So I mentioned the duress because sometimes in the, you know, because we have all these reactions, fight, flight, freeze, and fawn, right? So if you are in a fight mode, if you're a kid who managed to do that, you might have more injury done to you than a kid who was in freeze.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense because they held still just because they weren't able to control their body at all. They were completely
frozen. Yes.
Whereas if you were fighting, you're liable to, you wouldn't have held still.
So there's such a range then of what kind of injury can happen to you. So in my community, the injury is done to the clitoral hood, supposedly. So you might have had a very light cut and no scarring at all, or you might have had way more damage done even to your clitoris. Yeah.
Well, I love the way you said supposedly. So we are just a minute from break. When we come back, we're going to go into more detail about this. If you do have questions, please do send them in. We will endeavor to get all of them answered, even though we're pre-recording this one, so we won't have them live. But we will endeavor to get all of them answered. So please do send them in. We'll be back in a couple of minutes after some words from the sponsors.
Become our friend on Facebook. Post your thoughts about our shows and network on our timeline. Visit facebook.com/Voice America.
Are you ready to live to 100? Join Dr. Joe Casciani and his program that shows us that age is just a number. You can age with fresh and inspiring perspectives, whether it's staying physically fit or keeping mentally fit. With great stories, plenty of advice about successful aging, and brighter outlooks, you just might join those who are living to 100. The Living to 100 Club is broadcast live every Friday at 2 p.m. Pacific Time and 5 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Health and Wellness channel.
Follow us on Twitter at VoiceAmericaTRN. Get the lowdown on guests, new shows, and your favorites. That's VoiceAmericaTRN.
This is the A to Z of Sex, featuring Dr. Lori Beth Bisbee. We know you have questions. We welcome you to call in to 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. Feeling a bit shy? It's okay. Dr. Lori Beth loves to read your emails too. Send them to LoriBeth@DrLoriBethBisbee.com. Now, more of the A to Z of Sex.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back to the A to Z of Sex with me, Dr. Lori Beth Bisbee. And this week it is P, and P is for patriarchal abuse. I will say that right by the end of the show. And I'm with the amazing Farzana Doctor, and we're talking about female genital mutilation. And what you were saying before the break was that in your culture, it's supposed to be a clitoral hood cut. Now, that assumes that the person doing the cutting understands the different parts of your anatomy.
Yes. And again, with a lack of sex ed, I'd really wonder, and it's such a thin membrane.
Yeah.
You've got to be like really delicate. You've got to have good lighting. Like, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And do they have the sense that being delicate was important?
You know, in my community, we've had people talk about really different experiences. So I'm going to use air quotes. Some people have had light cuts. Other people have described like the whole hood removed. Some people have described having like half of it there and hanging. Like, it's just, there's no standardization, unfortunately, right? That I don't mean that there should be standardization, but there's no way to be able to make generalizations about it all.
It just seems so odd when, as somebody standing outside who didn't have any of that rhetoric growing up at all, didn't have great sex ed either, though, but, you know, there's that. And did come from a background where boundaries were very strange. However, it does seem to me very strange that they could justify in any way that would do something, right? If you're trying to control things so a woman doesn't have too much pleasure, because if a woman has too much pleasure, then she won't be faithful. I mean, that's part of the...
Yeah. And to people who have, given lots of thought to this and maybe are like interested in their sex lives and interested in pleasure and play and all of that, this would seem like really off the wall, right? But if you're part of a community where, sex isn't talked about at all and sex is considered to be something like a little shameful and all of that, you want your girls to grow up to be what you consider to be acceptable, and you've never thought about that. And so again, right. It's a cultural norm. It's just a norm.
Mm-hmm. I know, but it's foreign, obviously. But when you think about it, I mean, it doesn't even make any sense. If people actually thought it through, it wouldn't make sense at all.
It's true. There's this one scene in the book where I have my protagonist talking with her cousin who is pro-Kutna. And it's such a halting conversation where, one person is on one side, another person is, on the other side, but trying to make sense of it. And there are a number of places where my protagonist almost backs out of the conversation because she doesn't know how to even start a conversation with her cousin, who she's very close to. So I think that what happens is that if we're not able to normalize conversations about sexuality and about FGM, we're never going to be able to get anywhere with being able to stop FGM.
I think you're right. Yeah. And I think, one of the issues is that, I mean, how do you normalize when you can't even talk about sex? Right.
Yes.
I mean, how do you have that conversation if you have never been taught about your anatomy? So you don't even really know what you're losing.
Yes.
You're having problems with, because nobody said anything.
So it's the people who are in more privileged positions who don't have that much to lose, all of that, like people in my position who can just talk and talk and talk about it and hope that some of the people who can't talk about it can listen to some of these conversations. So, that's part of why I wanted to write a book that folded in some of these issues. It's why there's a lot of sexuality in the book, including some BDSM. It's why I'm part of groups that are starting to have panel conversations about sexual healing. And I've got this new advice column that talks about relationships and sex. So it's just about, let's just keep doing this and let's see if people will respond to it.
And I think it's so important because you're right. There's no way that we're going to change minds. There's no way that this is going to stop if people aren't even talking about the basics. Which is always fascinating to me that we're sitting here and it's 2020 and we still, in the vast majority of communities, and I think it's really important that people get that, when you say this is worldwide, it is. And the problem of not discussing this is worldwide. In the vast majority of communities, we are still not discussing sex. We get taken off, I get shadow banned on Facebook for talking about sex and healing, for talking about sexual trauma. If you say the word sex, you can't be on social media saying the word sex because that is automatically associated with porn. And here, I'm not saying that there's anything wrong with pornography, guys. Don't get me wrong. But to talk about what I do in the same breath as talking about pornographic entertainment, right? And saying that we're the same.
Yes. So you're trying to talk about health and wellness and like being in our bodies in a way that gives us pleasure. Yeah.
And joy. And it is amazing to me that rather than moving forward, we seem to be moving backward again. There's a much larger split. It's much harder to get any kind of decent education, which starts by understanding what it is that we've been given. We're born with a body. We should understand what's there.
Yes.
Yes. And I never had any of that. I mean, I'm 57. So sex education in the 70s in the United States was you know, this is your reproductive system, right?
Yes. And don't have sex.
Yes. Yep. Don't have sex because you'll get pregnant. I mean, we weren't even really talking disease then. I think they mentioned a couple of things. I remember them mentioning gonorrhea and syphilis, right? But it was don't have sex. You know, this is your reproductive system. And if you have sex, you might get pregnant. And the big thing that everybody was worried about was pregnancy. But there was nothing about pleasure at all. And there still isn't, which amazes me.
Yes.
And then after we don't educate people, we expect them to get married and then understand pleasure. It's this really strange thing. I mean, I spoke with some women who were part of the purity movement in the United States who said that they really internalized that sex before marriage was bad. Sex before marriage was bad. And then what they really internalized was that sex was bad. So they then got married and they couldn't feel anything and they couldn't let go and they couldn't sit in their body and engage in sex because all they could think of was it was bad. The fact that they now had a ring on their finger and a husband didn't make a difference because they've been so indoctrinated.
And so they have even though their bodies maybe didn't get cut in any way, they probably have major consequences that are similar to all kinds of trauma survivors. You know, they might even have sexual pain and not know why, right? And pelvic floor problems.
Yeah. A lot of vaginismus in that group.
And that's something that crosses over to trauma survivors and FGM survivors too. Yeah. You stamp shame on the body and it starts to hurt.
Yeah. Because anytime you feel something good, it's frightening. It's scary. So you've got to lock it up because really we're built for pleasure. And the reality is that if we weren't so locked up, it's easy for us to feel pleasure. You know, where there's always the story is we're more difficult than men, right? You know, we're more difficult, we're more complicated. That's the story. It's actually a lie. We're not more difficult. We're just different. But we get shame from the time we're very small still, unfortunately.
I think, you know, this idea that our sexuality has to be controlled is a very curious one, right? Like people are so threatened by our sexuality that they have to go to all these lengths. And I think it's time for us to take back that power.
What do you think people, I mean, this is such an interesting question for me because I try to imagine what people's reaction to that is. First of all, what do women think taking back their power looks like?
Well, I can tell you so when I was going through my own trauma around the Kutna, you know, I would have said before all of the trauma memories were kind of surfacing in a way that was hard, I would have said I was a really sex positive person, you know, no problems there, nothing has affected me. And then I started having body memories and nightmares. I started having freeze responses during sex and crying during sex. All this stuff started happening for me. So then I had to, I'm a therapist myself. So I knew okay, something's up, go see a therapist. So I went to see a therapist. I needed to educate her about Kutna because this is type 1 FGM. And if anyone has been trained, they've been trained about type 2 or type 3 because, you know, comrades from places where that's been happening have been doing much more work for much longer time.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I educated the therapist and then we just did a lot of work around mindfulness. And taking back the body for me meant re-owning my body. And I wouldn't have even known prior to that I didn't own my body. So it was really in a very experiential body-based way, knowing this is mine. I stop when I want to stop. I start when I want to start.
Yep.
I change everything if I want to change everything. Yep. It's really mine. And I didn't even realize that I didn't have that understanding before.
That's so interesting to me because I have a very similar experience as a result of sexual violence. We are 30 seconds from break. So we'll take the break and I'll tell you the story afterwards. But it's very, my sense was it was very much about this is mine. And I need to prove to myself again that it's mine.
Yes.
And it's a very different feeling. It's a very interesting one because it seems like that one crosses cultures.
Yes.
That's one of the things. Powerful. It is. It's one of the things that happens as a result is that we don't feel like we belong to ourselves in any way. So we'll be back in about 2 minutes after some words from our sponsors.
We're making it easier to listen to the Voice America Talk Radio Network live wherever you go on iPhone, BlackBerry, or Android. Download it from the Apple iTunes App Store, BlackBerry App World, or Android Market.
Functional Medicine with Dr. Robbins looks at how natural healing and biological dentistry can safely and effectively treat most health problems. You'll hear about the innovations in both traditional and alternative medicine therapies with doctors and dentists, along with discussions with chiropractors, medical experts, homeopaths, naturopaths, and energetic healers. It's great to have all the best information in one place. And Functional Medicine with Dr. Robbins brings it all together. Listen Thursdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Voice America Health and Wellness.
Become our friend on Facebook. Post your thoughts about our shows and network on our timeline. Visit Facebook.com/Voice America.
This is the A to Z of Sex, featuring Dr. Lori Beth Bisbee. We know you have questions. We welcome you to call in to 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. Feeling a bit shy? It's okay. Dr. Lori Beth loves to read your emails too. Send them to LoriBeth@DrLoriBethBisbee.com. Now, more of the A to Z of Sex.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the A to Z of Sex with me, Dr. Lori Beth Bisbee. And this week it is P, and P is for patriarchal abuse. And I am with the amazing Farzana Doctor, and we're talking about female genital mutilation and sexual violence. And before the break, I was saying that for me, as a sexual violence survivor, the thing that was important to me was to be able to say, this is my body. So one of the first things I did, this is going to sound really bizarre to some people, is I went and jumped out of an airplane.
That makes sense.
Yeah, it makes sense to you. Other people, and if you understand this, it really will make sense. And I remember that a friend of mine said to me, why the fuck are you doing that? And I said, because it's my body. And he tried to kill me. And if I'm going to die, I'm going to be the orchestrator of that. Nobody else gets to take that from me. And they were all like, okay, you're a bit odd. but I went and I did that. I'm also heavily tattooed, which most of the time people don't see. And that's the first one was in 1988. And that was the first taking back of my own skin. And I said, this is my skin. I can do what I want to my skin. And
that's beautiful.
That has continued. So I have a full back piece. I've got art everywhere. All of it's symbolic for me. None of it is. I'm one, if you're going to put something on your body forever, it better have meaning, because the meaning won't go away. Otherwise, you know, but it's a ritual for me of remembrance most of the time. Yes. And I've seen that in other survivors.
Yes.
There's an effort to do that. What's interesting is then people look at me and say, but you're a submissive. So how do you figure that out? And I said, well, because I'm doing it consensually.
Yes. And you're in control.
I mean, mm-hmm. That's my power to be able to gift this to somebody. And it's really difficult. I mean, I'm full time that way. So it's really difficult for people to understand sometimes. They're like, wouldn't you want not to do that? Well, actually, I had to work to be able to do it, because it requires being vulnerable. And when you've survived through things like this, being vulnerable is not something you're good at.
Yes.
It's dangerous.
Yes. Yes. So you end up being like really braced, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I tell everybody I'm the biggest control freak on the planet, right? But that's what I see. That's what I see across the board in people who have experienced any kind of patriarchal abuse, really. Women who have experienced this are all very much want to control their worlds.
Right.
Non-binary folks, same thing. I need to be in control of my world, because if I'm out of control of my world, something horrible happens.
Yeah. And so it makes sense that we want pockets, at least, of place and space where we don't have to be control freaks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's, I mean, because being a control freak is exhausting. It would be interesting to have the conversation with somebody who hadn't experienced it to find out how they view control.
Right.
Not a conversation that I think people have very often, just like we don't talk about our sex lives terribly freely. I mean, I hope that people have people they're comfortable talking about that with. Just, I mean, you know, just exploring just out of interest, not even working mm-hmm. things through. But I think control is another issue. Women are not meant to be controlling. Mm-hmm. You know, it's bringing mm-hmm. it back to what you said. This is about controlling women's sexuality. It's about controlling women. And why is that seen? Why are we so dangerous? What's so yes. dangerous about us that we have to be controlled?
Yeah, I think it goes back to being possessions, you know, non-consensually, you yeah. know, and yeah. We're property in that way that, you know, probably happened, you know, a couple hundred years ago. So, so we need to be controlled. So we know if we're having children, whose children those children belong to, because they're property too.
Yeah. 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 I think that's interesting because I was having that conversation with somebody the other day. We were talking about polyamory versus monogamy. Mm-hmm. And I was asked the question, do you think that monogamy is really inbred in humans? And I said, no, absolutely not. Because you can mm-hmm. see where monogamy starts. And monogamy starts where we start mm-hmm. having patriarchal societies as a rule.
Yes,
because matrilineal societies, it's not difficult to figure out inheritance.
Yeah.
You always
monogamy. Yeah. Monogamy is just a social norm at this point. Right. And mostly an unquestioned one.
Yeah. But it's all about power, which is the thing that I find most interesting about it, is that it remains about power.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So if women have had these experiences, where do they go when they realize something's yeah. wrong?
So unfortunately, there's not enough places. In the UK, you know, there are national action plans to deal with this. And what I mean by a national action plan is that there will be a system in place where the social workers know what to do and the doctors know what to do and the teachers and the border guards and all of that, right? Yeah. So so that does happen in the UK. And so there are some services available, but in Canada, there's almost nothing. It's just not talked about in Canada. In the US, there are some services, but you know, all of this is going to be stuff that is a little hard to access. So what I would say, if anyone is listening and is wondering where to go next, in your, wherever you live, look up FGM network, because in most areas there's some kind of FGM network. In Canada we have one, in the UK there is one, in across the EU there is one, in the US there is one, and so on. So look that up, and then you'll find the list of all the organizations that might be near you, and some of those might have like some therapeutic supports. Definitely, if you're speaking to a therapist, make sure that the therapist is trauma informed, because even if they don't know about FGM, they can start to make the links to be helpful, because someone might know about FGM, but if they don't know about trauma, then they're not very helpful as a therapist, right?
I'd be stronger than that, actually. As a trauma therapist, I'd be stronger than that. Don't see somebody who does, make sure they really know their trauma stuff first.
Yes, and have like methods to help you.
Absolutely. Yes. They can go and learn about FGM. You don't have to educate them about the whole thing. A good therapist yes. will go and learn on their own, and then you can educate them about your experience. But if they're not trauma informed, if they're not trauma trained, you're going to be in difficulty.
Yes. And the other thing I would say is go and find stories of other people in your own community, because that is really healing. So, for example, if you look up an organization called SAIYO, that's spelled S-A-H-I-Y-O, They have been doing stories from survivors for the last few years. They're just these 3-minute snippets, and they can be very powerful for like making connections for your own self. Be careful with seeing healthcare providers, because they, for the most part, don't know enough, and they can be very invalidating. If you do go to a doctor and you're unsure if they know anything, take a friend with you so that there's someone there to witness for you if there is an invalidating response. Because if you're a trauma survivor of any kind and then you get an invalidating response, it can really be shattering, right?
Absolutely.
So having someone there to say that wasn't okay, or even intervene on your behalf, can be really helpful.
I always recommend advocates. I mean, even the best of us, I'm a strong woman and I can speak my mind, but if I have to deal with medical practitioners in certain circumstances, I will have an advocate with me, because if I'm scared about something, I may not be in the best place to advocate for myself. So having somebody there with you who is able to be really clear and really strong is really useful.
Definitely. Yeah. Yeah, I'm a strong advocate too around all these issues. But if I go to the gynecologist, my partner comes with me. It's
right.
Just necessary for me. And nearly like nothing has happened ever, but it just makes me feel accompanied and witnessed. And that's really important.
Yeah, somebody who knows your truth and is able to speak to your truth, even if you don't need to use them.
Mm-hmm.
Just having that, so there isn't any of the potential. Because I mean, I've talked very vocally about some of my experiences with gynecologists, and how many of them don't educate women about the things that they should, and how many of them don't realize issues. So yeah, it's possible that it's not even whatever your trauma is that's pushing the button for them. They just don't know. They're just not well educated there. I mean, we can all be stuck in our own little narrow-minded place.
Mm-hmm.
It's always useful if you don't have to be the only one who's standing up for you in those circumstances.
Mm-hmm. Yes, of course.
Do you see this increasing or decreasing now with women speaking out?
You know, it's hard to say, because in most places, the governments aren't keeping statistics, right? And so it's very hard to tell. In places where statistics are being kept, again, if people aren't honest about what's going on, it's hard to know if the statistics are right. But I want to say that there's some hopeful anecdotal sorts of evidence that we're hearing about. So when it comes to the Dawoodi Bora community in Kutna, there have been some very public legal cases. And in the book, I kind of closely as I could in fiction, I documented some of those. And those cases, while they haven't been very successful in terms of prosecuting the people responsible, they have made people a bit afraid, because those cases happened because kids came forward and told somebody, a social worker or a teacher, that this thing had happened. So, people were alerted. So now people are kind of like, okay, well, you know, this was really terrible what happened to that doctor, to that mom. We don't want to go through that. So maybe we will just not do this. We're also hearing from people who are understanding the message that this is harmful, who previously kind of were in that mushy middle of people who are like, not sure, ambivalent about it. They're now saying, okay, I get that it can be harmful. Maybe it wasn't, you know, for me, but I get that it could be for other people. So I'm not going to do it, but I don't want to speak up about it. So I won't tell my mother-in-law or whoever's pressuring me to do it to my kid. I'll tell them I did it. I'll lie and say I did it. So there's that kind of subversive stuff going on. And then there are more people speaking up. In my community, you know, people who would have been very afraid, and there's some good reasons why people can be afraid to go against our religious leader, you know, are now retweeting things and reposting things. So that gives me a lot of hope. Even my own grandmother, who is 96 now, has agreed to have her photo taken for a couple of our social media campaigns. And that just touched my heart that she's a woman who said, okay, I get it. In the last 5 years, I get it. And I get that we have to change this.
Wow, that's amazing. So we will be back in a couple of minutes after some words from our sponsors.
Become our friend on Facebook. Post your thoughts about our shows and network on our timeline. Visit facebook.com/Voice America.
There is a difference in health and wellness programs. There can be mainstream programs, and then there is something extra. That something extra is called tips to keep you healthy, happy, and motivated with your host, Kristen Harper. If you want to hear some behind-the-scenes talk radio when it comes to health and wellness, the why as well as the how, be sure to tune in each week. This show will inspire you to be healthy and happy for life, as well as become the best version of yourself. Listen Tuesdays at 3 p.m. Pacific Time, 6 p.m. Eastern Time on Voice America Health and Wellness.
We're making it easier to listen to the Voice America Talk Radio Network live wherever you go on iPhone, BlackBerry, or Android. Download it from the Apple iTunes App Store, BlackBerry App World, or Android Market.
This is the A to Z of Sex, featuring Dr. Lori Beth Bisbee. We know you have questions. We welcome you to call in to 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. Feeling a bit shy? It's okay. Dr. Lori Beth loves to read your emails too. Send them to LoriBeth@DrLoriBethBisbee.com. Now, more of the A to Z of Sex.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the A to Z of Sex with me, Dr. Lori Beth Bisbee, and this is P, and P is for patriarchal abuse, and I am with the amazing Farzana Doctor. So what you said just before the break, 96 years old and is getting that we need to change, I'm just like, that just warms my heart.
Yes, so that's an example of just somebody who needed information.
Yep. And I'm sure that there are a lot of people who actually do, you know, I mean, I'm sure that there are, I imagine that, and I know of families where everything's gone along reasonably well, and then suddenly somebody had some really negative consequences. And that changed the whole family view towards what they did for the next generation, because they saw what happened with negative consequences. And sometimes it takes actually seeing that or hearing about that enough for someone to be like, oh, maybe I'm not looking at this in the right way.
Yes. Yes. And we're seeing that around some of the debates around male circumcision, which is not the same thing as what we're talking about. I want to make that really clear. But, you know, some survivors in that area are kind of saying, I had some negative consequences. Let's talk about this. Let's talk about how this is non-consensual. Let's talk about bodily autonomy of, you know, kids who were born male. Like, so Even that is being upended.
I know, but that gets more attention. This doesn't. It annoys me. It's like I ended up in part of a huge debate around that when I had my son, actually, and I was like, so we're spending a load of time. And I even said this: we're spending a load of time talking about this where I can document the overwhelming amount of non-negative consequences, but we don't talk about.
Yes.
When we mutilate women, right? You're getting on my case. This term, my son actually medically needed to be circumcised. So that kind of dealt with the moral debate for me, because because a doctor said, yeah, you need to do something and you're better off doing it now. Otherwise, you're going to have to wait till he's 2 years old. So he'll be in pain until he's two. And then we're going to have to put him under general anesthetic. And, you know, this is much easier. Do it this way. I was like, okay. But you know, there was this huge debate and I was like, oh, I love how we're all talking about this and everybody's up in arms and women are behind defending men and they're all up in arms and it's all very loud and very public.
Yes.
And this is very quiet and we don't talk about this.
And we're getting louder. Thank goodness we're getting louder. But yeah, there is this real, like, I feel like it's a culture of silence around it. So, you know, this last year in Canada, the NFGMC Canada Network, went to all of these political heads, you know, in cities and provinces to get them to make proclamations on February 6th, which is the International Day for Zero Tolerance of FGM. So, you know, there were most of the people said, okay, yeah, we'll do that. And they made the proclamation, which was very good because it raised awareness. But there was one community that said, oh, this is really controversial. We can't speak about that. And then, of course, they, you know, the network used that as an opportunity to do even more education to those folks. But people somehow think that this is controversial.
It's not controversial.
And it's not controversial. It's an issue around, you know, sexual violence that happens to girls, women, and non-binary people, and it just needs to stop, and right. We need to talk about it. And of course, you know, people have to be sensitive allies to the survivor-led movements. You know, you got to listen to the people who are impacted and amplify their messages and not be white saviors and all that kind of stuff. But beyond that, there's no controversy.
Yeah, no, I mean, when I hear it's controversial, I'm like, what's controversial about this? Don't mutilate people. It's really simple. if we were cutting on boys, and I'm not even boys' genitals, just on boys, right?
Yeah.
People would go nuts. Yes. And it would be a big, huge movement, and nobody, you know, there would be no issue. Nobody would think it was controversial to say, don't cut somebody for non-medical reasons.
Yeah, because boys are allowed to own their bodies.
That's right. And girls are not. Yeah. I mean, it's like, look, if you want, I mean, I see myself draw my breath in, but it's something I have to say. Like, if this is something that you want, that you decide to do as a person who is over the age of consent, and you, for your reasons, you don't even have to justify them to me. It's none of my business. It's your body. Mm-hmm. That's different. It's just like if you feel like getting piercings all over your face, it's not my business, right?
Yes.
It's none of that is my business. It's not my business if you make a decision once you're grown and you have all the information you need.
Mm-hmm.
That's not my business.
And as adults, people will have piercings, right? In their hood, right?
Yep.
So, you know, that's great. If you're doing it for yourself, it's, you know, your choice. That's great.
Right. That's a choice that you're making, and that's fine. There's nothing controversial about saying somebody shouldn't abuse a child, and it really is that black and white for me.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know,
it is
because there's no consent here, and there's no reason, and the cultural reasons don't stand up because you're still dealing with something that's permanent and non-consensual.
Yes, yeah, and it is that black and white to me too. One of the reasons why I got into some of the nuances in the book, and I have these, you know, all these women in different places with, you know, on the issue, is because you have to get into the nuances to be able to address a community.
Yep. And,
right?
it's actually really useful that you do that. It's really helpful because you're right. You've got to start with people with where they are. So mm-hmm. If we're, you know, I mean, I couldn't talk to some people right now because I'm incensed, right? I have to not
yes.
be incensed. And I think people don't realize that. You have to get to a place, if I'm working with a client and I know something like this has happened to them and it incenses me, I have to go and deal with my own feelings before I sit down with them. Because otherwise it's not their space.
I actually found that the book helped me with that. I think at the beginning of the writing of the book, I was just angry all the time. And then as I start to love my characters, even the characters who are pro-Kutna, and I really like love my characters, I started to feel just a little less angry about the issue. Like I still think that it's a problem and we need to change it and yada, yada, yada. But I really started to feel like, okay, I can love those women too, because this is intergenerational violence. They're victims too.
Yeah.
They're messed up about it too.
Yeah. And trying to unpick that is really difficult because you've got intergenerational trauma and it just keeps getting passed down. And even the generation that doesn't do this is still going to have to deal with the trauma of the generations past. So
yes.
But it is one of the lovely things about the way you write, that you really do, you get drawn right into the characters, and you really do get a sense of all the aspects of the issue, which I love. I mean, I love being drawn in, because I wouldn't be able to go there without somebody prompting me to go there.
Yeah. And that's part of why I wrote it as fiction as well, because you can just have, like, hopefully a really enjoyable reading experience. Yeah. You know, you have all these stories and people and their relationships and so on. And then you fold in some of this hard stuff. And then it's really kind of something that you can digest as a reader.
It's definitely something that I would recommend if you've had no awareness of the issue,
mm-hmm.
because it gives you so many different bits and pieces. And it does it in a way, you just do a beautiful job with the characters. You know, it does it in a way you're really drawn into the story. So this isn't heavy, right? In any way, it's actually really enjoyable.
Okay, good, good. And I hope will happen with this book, because, you know, I am part of this End FGM movement, and I just hope that it becomes a contribution to this movement. I hope that the social workers and the teachers and the doctors and the nurses and just everybody reads this. And I hope that it is actually just a fun read for people.
Yeah, no, if they react to it like I did, they'll find it that way. It's been superb. And it's just, the bottom line for me is that it highlights yet again that we need to start taking back our own power and owning our own bodies. And we need to start educating our young women.
Mm-hmm.
And that shouldn't be controversial.
Yes.
I know it is to say it's my skin and I have a right to my skin. I know it is because I just watched the US election, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's a Supreme Court judge who believes that, you know, issues like this are too, what was the way she put it? They're culturally controversial and politically controversial issues. Right.
Yeah, and they just aren't. In every community where this is practiced, you're going to find the feminist activists, and they'll show everyone the way.
Yeah, yeah, and just really get people to start thinking outside your own box as well. Figure out what, you know, I know we don't know what we don't know. That's one of our, you know, we all have blinders, every single one of us. But it is something that, you know, if you don't know your own body, that's the place to start.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody should be telling you that you shouldn't know your own body. You should know your own body first. And if people are trying to stop you from knowing that, you need to be looking to find the safe places to explore.
Yes. Yeah.
last words on this.
Last words. So I would say just remember that FGM is not this weird thing that weird people do. It's part of a continuum of patriarchal violence that happens all across the globe. It's not dissimilar from all of the other patriarchal violences that you would be experiencing in your own neighborhood. And get involved if you can in your local in your local area. Just find the networks and the organizations who you can support.
Absolutely. That's wonderful. And if they want to find you, where should they reach you?
I can be found on social media at Farzana Doctor. So that's Farzana, F-A-R-Z-A-N-A and Doctor. FarzanaDoctor.com is my website. And my book can be found right now in North America in all formats. And I'm hoping that soon it'll be available across Europe and India as well.
Outrageous. And I actually have quite a large Indian listening audience.
Great.
So thank you so much for joining me. This has been absolutely great. Okay, guys. So, my pleasure. So next week, don't forget, if you've got questions, please do email me. You can email me at drloribeth@azofsex.com or loribeth@drloribethbisbee.com. Don't miss the Erotica podcast. It's Dr. Lori Beth Bisbee's Erotic Library. You can find that on my site, drloribethbisbee.inc. You can also find it on Patreon. If you join and support me on Patreon, you end up with exclusive readings, ebooks, and interviews with the authors and some really cool swag, because you're helping me to defray production costs for this radio show and the Erotica podcast. If you want more, do head over to Facebook and join my Facebook group, which is aptly named Dr. Lori Beth Bisbee's membership group. You can find it under Dr. Lori Beth Bisbee. That's the place where all the new content goes and some discounts for events and things like that. And this week on Saturday night, the 21st of November, is the Oral Fixation Masterclass. This is a 3-hour class on oral sex. If you're interested in attending, and you should, you can find the link in the podcast notes, or it is http://a2zofsex.co/oral. I look forward to seeing all of you next week when the letter will be Q. Have a great week and please stay safe.